Hello, hello, and welcome to the Arts Report. This is Megan, as I mentioned, and we are joined in the studio today by the Vancouver Latin American Film Festival, and we are joined by Blank TV. Blankverse TV, of course, not all the whole organization, but we have special guest Enrique Vasquez here today. Enrique, thanks for coming to the Arts Report.
Thanks for having me, Megan. It's pretty good to be here.
We are going to be talking a little bit about Enrique's film Strings Attached, and we are going to listen to his recommendation, Mazacote, which you can find on mazacote.ca. So we're going to be playing a little bit of that in the background. Very appropriate. I wanted to tell you a little bit first before we start about the Vancouver Latin American Film Festival. It is running from August 30th to September 8th at venues including Pacific Cinematheque, the lovely Pacific Cinematheque. And we actually have some tickets to give away. Later on, before the break, we will give you a shout out to call in. And you can also have us going at twitter.ca/artsreport and twitter.com rather. It's that one with the bird, I believe. Anyway, it is a great way to get in touch with us, and you can like win tickets. It's great. So the passes we have, because we are sponsoring the film festival because we love local arts, are Sidorni's Butterflies and Nikkei. And Sidorni's Butterflies is an Argentinian film. It is going to be on September 8th at 1 p.m. at the Cinematheque. And it is a melodrama, a surrealistic melodrama about a circus dwarf named Sidorni, who is jailed for a crime of passion. And he's then faced with a dilemma. Is he going to escape, or is he going to adjust to society's expectations through extreme physical metamorphosis? So a very artistic film, and it was also aired at the Midnight Sun Film Festival. So that looks like a very, very cool show. And it is Spanish with English subtitles, directed by Dario Nardi. The other film is Nikkei. It is Spanish and Japanese with English subtitles. Karori Flores Yonekura is the director and screenwriter, and this is about the search for identity. The director is telling the story of her grandparents' journey from Japan to Peru to Venezuela, and along their way, they are investigating the idea of home against the larger backdrop of World War II. This is going to be screening September 7th at Goldcorp Center for the Arts at SFU at 7 p.m. So we have two passes for each of those. If you're interested, give us a call at 604-822-2487, or you can at CITR_TheArtsReport and tell us which you'd like tickets for. And remember to at us and to at VLAF. But the film of the hour is called Strings Attached, Lazos Unidos. It's a film from last year, and it is English and Spanish with English subtitles. And it's about a young Colombian boy who travels around Vancouver trying to find his father, who has been incarcerated. It is a lovely little film that really showcases the point of view of the young boy. Everything is larger than life. And it also showcases the backdrop of Vancouver. But I'm not going to say anything more about it. I'm going to let Enrico do all the work. That's why I have guests, so I don't have to do all the work myself. Enrique, thanks for coming. Before we start talking more about the film, I'd love to share a little bit more about yourself. Now, you have a film background. This is with the Vancouver Film School. It's a collaborative project. But tell us a little bit about your background as a filmmaker before you came to the Vancouver Film School.
Well, thank you. Thanks again, Megan. It's very good to be here. I studied film school in Mexico City. I went into film school around 10 years ago now. And over there, I've made a lot of short films, and I went to the the festival circuit, those shorts, documentary shorts, fiction shorts. They played in Mexico, Spain, the U.S., Holland, Chile, I guess, Turkey, even. So we've traveled that circuit, and then I decided to come here to Canada to study in the Vancouver Film School, the Entertainment Business Management program, to kind of hone my producing skills, and because I've always seen the filmmaking endeavors as a very holistic. So you cannot be just one thing. You really need to expand your knowledge backward.
I like to keep things very single dimension only. I'm just joking. No, and so you actually kind of came into the project. It was already kind of underway, right?
Oh, yep. It was a project that started Maria Lozano. I had the privilege of studying with her in school. And since this was mainly a producing program, she got this project off the ground. It was supposed to be, or it's still, a proof of concept for a feature film. And, I started working with her. I helped her doing the casting sessions, and I helped her doing the giving her some reference work and some of the background information that she needed to get that script written. And then I was going to be the assistant director, and the actual director was going to come from Colombia. But, in the end, he wasn't able to do it, so I jumped in the last minute. But after all, I had been working all the time with Maria, and I really knew what the story was about, and I could really relate with everything that was going on in the story. I had directed the casting sessions and the scouting sessions, so I was in there, and it felt pretty natural to just go and do it with, and get the directing work done.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the interesting things about this film is that this young boy, he barely speaks. He doesn't have the kind of English skills, and I mean most kids don't. But he doesn't. You know, people are kind of excluding him a little bit because he doesn't really seem to know how to ask for help. And he sees a photo of his father in the paper, and he's trying to figure out more information, and he's trying to ask adults. And they all have these different reactions to him, and he's moving throughout the city. And some of the, as I said, some of the performances really reflect what a child must feel like when they don't know the language and they don't really know the city that well. One of the things you were talking about is while you obviously came to Canada as an adult and, you know, knew the language and were, a competent artist already, you didn't necessarily have the same issues, but that there was reflected in this film the idea of when you go to a new place, learning to communicate all over again.
And now that you said it, it's funny when you're a little kid that even though in your own surroundings it's hard to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone, it's kind of ignoring you, or if you have a very strong opinion, you really have to shout about it, and you really have to make yourself heard because you're a little kid, and mm-hmm. people will easily dismiss you, especially if you're in a grown-up environment.
Uh-huh.
So this was a little bit trying to amplify that feeling and multiply it times the number of cultures that you can find here in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different set of behaviors and codes between all the cultures that are here. And of course, I have that issue with all the the rest of the continents, and they do have that problem with our ways of communicating. We might tend to be probably very loud at some point, and probably very invasive. We kind of hug each other a lot, and
I can relate to that. That kind of describes me.
that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's hard for people to really understand when it's about culture and also when it's about the person that you are also relating to, because mm-hmm. it's not always because of a culture that there's also the issue of individuality.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all this challenges and all this communication translated into a little kid looking for his father. So that was mainly the challenge and the story we tell here, that it's hard for the kid to communicate, but he also wants something pretty simple, which is he wants to reunite with his lost father.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that this film kind of showcases is lots of really recognizable parts of Vancouver. I mean, this kid's running all over the city. He's through Chinatown, Yale Town, the downtown east side. And there are things there that even if you've lived in the city, may be unfamiliar depending on what area of the city you've kind of stuck to for your life. So that must have been a kind of a big challenge, is trying to get all of these shoots in, because you said you only had 2 days to film.
Yeah, it was a pretty tough shoot. We had 2 days and we had, I don't remember, over 10 locations. So well, the production was top-notch, amazing, and our AD, Andrea, she was amazing as well. So we had really to get moving and to shoot in a fast pace, and basically we went into what we knew we wanted, and then if you add that to the fact that we were working with a little kid, so you mm-hmm. only have a very limited amount of hours with him, then yeah. it was pretty stressful and pretty fun.
Were there any incidents while you were filming, getting from place to place and kind of interacting and or maybe with the kid that stood out for you in terms of like overcoming a challenge?
It's hard for. I was fortunate to work with this kid because he has never had a big trauma in his life.
I don't have his name here. What was his name again?
Oh, he's Daniel.
Daniel. Okay, yeah. Great.
So he's never had a big trauma in his life, fortunately. Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes hard for me to convey in him how it must feel like when you lose a parent or when you're lost in a city that you don't know nothing about or that you cannot really communicate in a language, because he's fluent in both Spanish and English. So that was a challenge with working with him, but I think he made a fantastic job, and it was all playing with him and making him like know that it was all right and we were there to support him, and that's always important when you're working with little kids.
Now, you said that this was the first time that you have done a film that you haven't written, but you've done films before, as you said, on the circuit. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the themes that you like to work with as a director and as a producer of films? Because you were saying that, you know, kind of being out of place. So I'd love to hear about some of the other work that you've done. I know people can find you on vimeo.com/EnriqueVS. But yeah, I'd like to know a little bit more about kind of on a wider scale why that out-of-placeness fascinates you and why you keep coming back to that theme.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating for me because I kind of always feel kind of slightly off place. It's mm-hmm. not like you are completely like out of somewhere. It's not like you are in a complete conflict with where you are, but mm-hmm. just you're slightly out of place. Maybe it's because I'm left-handed or or something like that. But yeah, like the first documentary short I made, it was pretty well received. It played at the festivals in Europe. It played at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. It's about organ grinders, mm-hmm. which are these street musicians in Mexico that play this big box that has this like a proto, I like to call them proto DJs, and it's like this giant music box. So they have a lever and they play with that. So, and they're a very old tradition in Mexico, mm-hmm. but they're also like looked at in a very weird way right now. So we kind of brought that tradition back, and also my thesis film in film school was about a locksmith that likes to go into his clients' houses to see how they live. Mm-hmm. So he imagines he lives a life different than the one he does. And another short I did just after film school was another one called Big Fit, and it's about a little parent, like a chubby guy, that has a daughter, and he wants to get he's divorced, and he has a little daughter that kind of hates him. So he tries to get close to her using a bicycle. So he's this very chubby guy that goes to work in his bicycle. So people laugh at him, and he has to overcome all that in order to reunite with his daughter.
That's nice. Is there something about kind of children that brings out these themes that you think, or is that kind of incidental? The idea of having a child as one of the focuses of the play, because he's trying to reunite with his daughter, right? Like that childlike aspect.
Yeah, I think it's a very good mirror to see yourself through children, because they ask everything in such a, such a naive way.
Mm-hmm.
So everything you think is right basically crumbles when a kid asks you why you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important to keep that kind of childish mindset and try to really understand why we became what we became. So I would say that I never thought about I would be working with kids so much, but I've enjoyed it so far.
That's good. You're lucky, because they say kids and animals are hard to work with, but it looks like you've been really lucky. One of the things that you mentioned when we were talking earlier was that you were trying to bring into Strings Attached, to bring it back to that. Was that in Latin America, the children are often kind of afraid to kind of go out on the street by themselves, which I think to certain degrees, depending on where you live, is true in many places. But how did that influence you in how you directed this young boy and what his experience on the streets was going to be?
We in Latin America, it's believed that streets are pretty dangerous. It's like it's maybe a longer conversation than that, but but I can say that when I was a little kid, mm-hmm. I used to go out on the streets. But people are generally afraid of the public space. There's not a whole social appropriation of public space.
Okay, interesting.
So in that regard, here in Vancouver, I feel like streets are, like, as opposed to Mexico City, they're pretty safe, mm-hmm. and they're pretty empty.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more about how this kid would feel scared of his surroundings, not because he was strangled in a big city, like it would have been the case in Mexico City, but because he is in a haunted place where he finds all these kind of strange characters that are not bad in a way, but they kind of make a big impression on him.
It kind of seems like there's parts of the film that are like kind of funhouse mirrors. Like there's the scary homeless guy and the mean shopkeeper, and you can tell that they're very exaggerated and not even dangerous. Or what I found interesting was the shopkeeper was actually a lot more aggressive and dangerous than the homeless guy, which is something that if you do spend time like in our downtown east side, you realize. But it does, it seems scary at first, and I could really kind of relate to, if you're not really sure what your surroundings are, then it makes it a lot more uncomfortable and you're not really sure who you can trust.
Exactly, and where you can find that little patience, because you always to overcome communication barriers, mm-hmm. it always comes down to patience, just hearing and being heard.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what sums it up, and this kid didn't have the patience to explain himself, mm-hmm. and most of the characters he meets with don't have the patience to listen to him, so that's kind of a challenge that he has to overcome.
So I don't want to spoil it per se, but it's a bit of cliffhanger at the end. We're not really sure what is going to happen next. And you know, you mentioned that it was kind of, the project was kind of could be turned into a bigger film. Like that was the thing that you're supposed to be learning through the production program. Is there plans to kind of expand it into a larger project, or is it going to stay a short film?
We're leaving it as it is right mm-hmm. now. We're working on other projects with Maria. We're currently post-producing a documentary.
Oh, cool! What's the subject?
It's about a kids again. It's not directed by me. It's directed by another Mariam. It's she's called Maria Torres, and we Maria Lozano and me joined to produce that. And it's about this school of kids in southern Mexico, and they learn to play brass instruments, just brass instruments. So it's looking at how these kids relate with their instruments and how they learn about the world and about the music through their instruments. So it's what we're working on right now. It's a feature documentary and should be ready in a couple of months.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to that. Keep us in the loop about that, because I'd love to see it. Okay, well, is there anything else you wanted to add, maybe about the film or any films that you're excited to see at the festival, which is running from August 30th until September 8th at the Pacific Cinetech?
Well, this film will screen on September 5th. It's a Thursday, and it will screen at 7:15. And it will screen before a film called She Doesn't Want to Sleep Alone. It's a Mexican film, and I'm very interested in watching that. I've heard pretty good things about it. And I'm interested in the whole program. I found that a lot of the films deal with a lot of these multicultural issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very interested in that, because there's a Mexican director that went to Japan and did a film there, and there's... This film you talked about, the one of the Cardi's film, that she's from Venezuela but her family's from Japan. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very good, because it's not only for the Latin American community, this festival. It really speaks to everyone in Vancouver. So as long as you enjoy watching good films, then you will definitely find something for you.
Yeah, actually, one of the things I really like about the festival is that... you know, it overlaps, you know, there's usually there's queer films, and they always do all these community partnerships with like other film festivals and other arts festivals. And it's actually a really diverse, but always coming back to kind of the Latin American experience, which has this just rich and diverse culture, various cultures within it. I was actually for the Fringe Festival, I'm covering the topic of like Canadianness and migration and stuff, and I was talking to someone whose mother was from like a Spanish fishing village and father was from like a huge city in Cuba, and that kind of experience, sometimes if you're not really familiar, you might think those cultures are similar, but they're not at all. So it's a really really, really cool event to check out. I have to say that this short film is part of the Canada Look South program, and it is specifically about, and that is a series of films that are produced about Canada or by Canadians, and there's that connection. So we kind of focused on that at the Arts Report, but you can also listen to the Leo Ramirez show on Monday evenings, and that he is going to be doing some Vancouver Latin American Film Festival stuff as well. Thank you so much, Enrique, for joining us, and you can find him, as I said, on vimeo.com/EnriqueVS and on the 5th at 7 p.m. For Strings Attached, and you can find out all that good stuff on vlaff.org. We are gonna turn up the music for a little bit and take a break. During this time, please give us a call at 604-822-2487. That's UBC CITR, or you can tweet at us at CITR Arts Report, and win tickets to either Sadourney's Butterflies or Nikkei, which look like some really beautiful films. Okay. Stay tuned for the Arts Report, CITR 101.9.
Sabroso está, hoy me voy a tirar como en el solar. Oye mi rumba, qué buena, yo me tiro para el solar. Can't wait. tiro por allá.
Oye, mi rumba, qué buena. Yo me tiro pa'l sola.
Rumberito, rumbero, no te vayas. Que si te vas yo me
Oye,
voy.
Oye, mi rumba, qué buena. Yo me tiro pa'l sola.
La rumba, la clave y el guaguancó. Con esa música que te canto de
Oye,
corazón.
Oye, mi rumba, qué buena.
On Sunday, September 8th, The Evaporators are playing a free all-ages show. Come catch them at Astorino's, located at 1739 Vendables, with guests Tough Age and The Goblins at 7:27 p.m. For more information, go to nardwar.com.
The Double Play Pass gets you one ticket each to Speech and Debate and Cocktails at Pam's, two hilarious plays this fall at Studio 1398 on Granville Island. See both shows for just $25. Double Play Passes are on sale now until August 31st. Visit facebook.com/20somethingtheater to buy a pass and learn more.
CITR 101.9 Arts Report. We are going to be talking with Ryan and Xander from Blank Verse TV. Now, if you don't know, now you know. There is a web series just starting out. The prologue you can find on blankversetv.tumblr. But you know what? You could just go to citr.ca for the prologue, or on our Facebook. It is a project that kind of is bringing Shakespeare to the modern university. We are going to talk a little bit about the project with the director of Act One, as well as the starring role, Will Shakespeare, and also the writer of Act 5, which is soon to be released. But what I thought was, we will play the first episodes that you're getting, somewhat of a peek into the first episode, and they have made it radio friendly. They have cut it together especially. So this is like a special bonus edition of Blank Verse and Blank Verse series just for the Arts Report. And we'll give you an idea of what the project is, and then we are going to talk about it. So this is Blank Verse, the first act.
hi.
Ben.
Right. The girl with the name of a boy.
It's actually a family name. Ben is just the short form.
What's it the short form of?
Benjamina.
Unfortunate.
Pardon me?
Benjamina's a beautiful name. Why shorten it?
Oh, thank you. People have just always called me Ben. I never really thought much of it.
Who am I to change the way people speak?
How's your first week going? I've been having an amazing time. There are so many talented people here, and the campus is beautiful. I can't wait till I'm a full-time student here next year.
You're not a full-time student now?
No, actually, I'm still in high school. I'm just here to take an advanced writing credit.
Impressive. Ambition is a trait somewhat lacking in the youth of today, if you ask me.
Thank you.
Though I can't say I've shared your experience, so far this hasn't lived up to my expectations at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not happy with your courses?
Oh, they're fine. It's just I expected something more. I had a sense of kismet when I got here, like I came to the right place. I left a lot behind. So far this hasn't lived up to my notion.
Oh, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Also, I didn't get into Chris Marlowe's discussion group. She's already in talks with the producer about the film rights to her book. Can you believe that? It's everything I want to be as a writer.
Really? That surprises me.
Why? What could be better than everybody knowing your name?
But a movie is just someone else's interpretation of your work. And from my experience, those films are rarely a testament to the source material. That kind of notoriety is just cheap.
Doesn't make it wrong. We can't all be Chaucer. I would rather be remembered for one piece of work, no matter how bastardized, than forgotten or never known at all.
Do you really think you'd just be forgotten?
In time, we're all forgotten. Every living thing that's ever known us dies. But the work survives, and the writer with it. I just want to make it a little harder for future generations to forget the name Will Shakespeare.
I like William better.
That sounds pretentious. People won't read your work if they think you're pretentious.
I don't think the audience you're going for does much reading at all.
I didn't say they have to be avid readers, they just need to read me. But I'm not going to make anyone read my stuff unless I can start learning from Marlowe. She won't even respond to my emails. So now I just toil away in internet obscurity. There it is. My latest work. Out into the abyss of the internet.
You're a lot better than you give yourself credit for. Fame and fortune aren't everything. Wouldn't you rather be remembered for your words? The right words from the right voice can change someone's perspective on the world, or move you to tears, or break your heart, or make you laugh until you cry.
Words won't pay my bills, put a roof over my head. I could craft the greatest story ever told, but it would mean nothing if only a handful of insignificant people read it.
I would read it.
Exactly. Oh, I didn't mean to offend you. I'm just trying to make a point.
Which you did, quite clearly.
You'll understand this better when you're older.
Or maybe you will. If you're so set on learning from Chris Marlowe, why don't you just go talk to her? She was in my seminar classroom a little while ago. See if she has time to turn you into a significant writer.
And that was Act 1, Scene 1 of Blankverse, the series, which can be found on blankverse.tv as well as at blankverse.tv on Twitter, as well as a variety of media on there. And that's actually something we're going to talk about a little bit later in the second half of the Arts Report on CITR. But I would like to officially welcome Ryan and Xander from Blankverse. Welcome to the Arts Report, you guys.
Thank you. Hi, Megan.
Thanks for coming. So we have Ryan Caron, who is working in theater and new media with kind of an interest in fan response And we have Xander as well, who is an actor, writer, and musician at the BFA program at UBC. Seems to lean towards the traditional there, Xander. You got Shakespeare. And I wanted to learn a little bit more about the project. So we've just heard Act One, Scene One. Mm-hmm. And it is this kind of reimagining or bringing Will Shakespeare to the new media era. Explain to me the structure of how this is going to work over the next weeks or months.
Okay, so hello everyone, I'm Xander. I just finished the UBC BFA acting program.
You are our star, Will Shakespeare. That sounds pretentious.
Yeah, it does sound pretentious. Will is a very prominent character, certainly the one that people remember the most, and so a lot of the show focuses on him and his writing. If you're familiar with Shakespeare's works, you're going to find a lot of inside jokes, and it's going to take up a lot of the content of the series. The way it's structured is each season is going to be in five acts, much like a Shakespearean show. Each act is going to comprise of four weekly episodes, being like Act One, Scene One, which was released last Sunday. And every act is going to be written by someone else and directed by someone else. So Act One was written by Arlen Tom and directed by Ryan Caron, who's sitting right beside me.
I did, indeed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Season One is going to follow Shakespeare through writing Two Gentlemen of Verona,
Taming of the Shrew,
Titus Andronicus,
yes.
Love's Labor's Lost, and finally Romeo and Juliet, mm-hmm. which is the act I'm writing.
Now we're taking real inspiration from each of those plays and using it to define the core themes of each act. Mm-hmm. Really staying true to the theater model. About 80% of us on the team come from a strong theater background, and also borrowing from the television model of rotating creative teams, directors, writers. We're trying to invent something really new in our process of how this show is made. Something that's collaborative and brings together over 60 artists giving their time and being part of this project.
I just wanted to give a shout out to Jasper Sloan Yip, which is Sandra's choice for our listening pleasure today. I think what caught my eye with the prologue is, first of all, you have unconventional casting. So Ben Johnson and Marlo are both female. We have our own Deb Pickman is also, I have to give a shout out to her because she's a friend of the show. And just the idea of kind of, I was joking about it a lot on Twitter, but like a bit of a new spin. What would William Shakespeare or these kind of traditional poets and writers be like, mm-hmm. If they were learning their craft now in today's era? Also because they are kind of revered and a lot of them are just young upstarts who are just kind of trying to make a buck.
Yeah, a big part of this show, something so exciting to me, is taking these legends, these figures of history.
Yeah, they're not even people anymore.
No, they're beyond that. But making them real by putting them in the world that that I lived like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. that our audience, our target audience, are living in right now. Making them human again, taking them right out off that pedestal and showing the whole struggles. We're all young, emerging, mostly Vancouver artists, dealing with the craziness of studying in school and making your own work. And it's a whole different set of problems than these people dealt with, but it's still, the arts world really lucrative, right?
Yeah, never.
So we're updating that.
Well, yeah, and you got to make it, one of the interesting things about Shakespeare is that he was so, and the debates that rage over his work mm-hmm. are usually centered on how much he was pandering yes. versus how much he was critiquing and where was his balance, and depending on, every person has a different argument as to what level he was at when it came to his actual just trying to make money and what his artistic intentions were.
And I think we heard that right in Act One, Scene One, as a core conflict there. The show, it's about Shakespeare, but it's not just through his eyes.
No, he seems to be the representation of that era that you're looking at more than anything.
Yeah, he's a jumping off point for mm-hmm. us. We've got four big perspectives. Ben Johnson is our young idealist who's mm-hmm. fresh from high school, seeing the world, and so excited. Shakespeare's a bit of a middle ground. He's jaded, cynical. He wants to make it big and be famous. Chris Marlowe, who we haven't met yet, she also is the Stephanie Meyer of this world. She made it big a few years earlier, and she's been overwhelmed by the fame. Now she wants to be an artist again, but she's so famous she can't. So we're looking at all sides of this commercial art. People who want it, people who are in it, people who are idealistic and think they can avoid it. That whole range.
To be fair to Kim Marlowe, I'm pretty sure Stephanie Meyer was never an artist to begin with. That's right. That's right. I'm not a Twilighter or whatever they're called.
Okay, John Green then.
Yeah.
Suzanne Collins.
I'll allow it. Susan Collins. So tell me a little bit about what it's like to play Shakespeare, Xander, and how what choices you made.
It's so funny because every act is being written by someone else. So there's like, and everyone has a different opinion on Shakespeare. So it's kind of trying to marry all of these different, a lot of people don't believe he really existed. He's becoming like, trying to kind of, produce a character, like at some point I just kind of had to let all that go and just say the words, but just, you know, produce a character that has, you know, some consistency basically. From the standpoint of what Ryan said, like who he is, what his background is, and just where he is right now. I think, as actors, we're so attached to, we're so obsessed with attaching our characteristics or our personalities to this kind of linear narrative as like a causal product of it. But it's really fun working with a bunch of different writers on the same character, because the ability to change who you are from scene to scene is it's something real. It's not, the show is very neat and like witty and tight, but it's also real, and I like that about it.
It's really dynamic. We have all these different ideas flying at you guys, flying at the actors, at the people in the front lines, who then get to, you know, catch it 3 days before we film and figure out how does this fit into the person I think I'm playing.
No.
Though we do have a production team who are keeping some consistency. You know, we're trying to go somewhere with it and create a real big story to not just bounce around in theoretical weirdness, but really tell an entertaining story is what we hope.
Well, you're interested in, and as we mentioned, in the idea of like fandom and in that influence that it has on culture, and there is no one that's going to pull you up short on inconsistencies better than a fandom.
And you know what? That's a lot of the thing about William.
He said he had three great grand sisters.
Exactly. I mean, like a lot of it is who is this person? Like in the prologue, everyone was introduced with this. If you can watch the prologue on YouTube, everyone's kind of introduced. Deb Pickman comes up and it says like, Queen Elizabeth, except in this show.
Elizabeth Tudor, head of the creative writing department. Yes.
She'd make a good Elizabeth.
She does.
Yeah. Deb's amazing.
I'm looking forward to seeing those episodes. But then it says like a lot of like sir titles, basically. Like, this is who she is and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then Thomas Kidd, another prominent figure, will come up and it'll be like, he's a Linux user. Linux, sorry.
That says a lot.
Student of Life is one of his subtitles.
And then it gets to Shakespeare and it's just question mark. And that really is. It's just... he's in university, he's figuring out who he is, and we're figuring out who he is, and that's been the real joy of playing Will, I think.
What, Ryan, for this first episode, this first scene, what were some of the... Where did you draw direct reference and direct influence from some of these legends, and where did you make... Which were the choices that were quite different you decided to step away? I mean, we've talked about gender a little bit already.
Yes. Act one, we focused on what are these relationships. We didn't get too tied up in historical reference.
Are there some coming up maybe that you can talk about that are kind of... People might be shocked if they know the story of these characters?
Chris Marlowe... I would look closely at her relationship with Thomas Kidd. There's a great tradition that Chris Marlowe originated of the shoulder devil, the shoulder angel, Mephistopheles, these voices in your head. That's a bit of a subtle construct. Mm-hmm. In a much less subtle way, once if you check out the Messenger speech, which is our the paper of Bankside University. We've got this whole world we're building. You're going to meet Henry Lancaster, not Lannister. and Richard York, who are, you know, trying to be student body presidents and in direct competition with each other. We're taking all these little gags and creating a side world that's there for a bigger audience. Watch the prologue closely. Behind Chris Marlowe, a blonde girl spills red ink on her hands and spends the rest of the prologue trying to wipe it off. It's
who could that be? Spot.
Everyone is a character in the background.
And also to speak on the historical accuracy, I mean, like, we have a team of writers, and for Act 4, actually, three of us, Charlie Allison, Aaron Adams, and myself are collaborating to write Act 4, also to give it some through line. And then also, I mean, like, Aaron Adams is a student of English, and he's a major history buff.
He makes obscure Chaucer references.
Other than those mainstream Chaucer references. Yeah.
And Charlie Allison is a longtime writer and a very prominent pop culture
also a film student, a film expert, I would say.
Yeah, and then me, I mean, I'm the classically trained, well, no, I'm the UBC trained, like,
Shakespeare and Octave, played all the Macers.
Yeah, and so I think the three of us together in a room have, like, the history down, like, the Shakespeare references down, and trying to make it compelling, which I'm just going to give to Charlie. And,
Well, we have to take a quick break to kind of let people know about some of the stuff we're doing, but let's come back and spend the last few minutes talking specifically, like, we've talked about the content, which I think is really fun and interesting and accessible, but I want to talk a little bit about the actual format when we come back on the Arts Report. I'm going to talk about transmedia. What's so fancy? Okay, we'll be back soon.
Red Jam Slam Society presents Radio Fest Fundraiser on September the 6th, 2013, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Radio Cafe, 101 Hastings Street in Vancouver on the corner of Columbia. Come and meet our lineup of Aboriginal professionals in our ever-expanding cultural industry, featuring model Jolene Alicia Mitten and carver Andy Wesley. With these artists and more, we will be raising funds for our first ever radio festival to be held within days on September 10th to the 13th in celebration of reconciliation. For more information, please go to redjamslam.com.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to big pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so big pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education, every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
The 11th annual Vancouver Latin American Film Festival runs from August 30th until September 8th. This year's festival will feature over 40 of the best feature-length and short films to come out of Latin America over the past year, including a spotlight on Colombian cinema, Canada Looks South, Asian perspectives from Latin America, and a series of talkbacks with guest directors following selected screenings. Online ticket sales begin on August 14th at vlaff.org.
And we are back on CITR 101.9. I want to talk to you guys a little bit in the last few minutes of the show about specifically the format. Because you guys are cross-platform, and you've built that into the actual production. So you have, it's a web series, but you also have character work happening via Twitter, via Tumblr, via Facebook. So can you outline that a little bit for me and tell us why do it as a web series specifically rather than, like, say, film that you then put on the internet?
Sure. The internet is, it's a wild west of a medium. The same as when television was new, the same as when film was new, it took a while for those mediums to settle and for artists to start realizing how they can best use it. I believe that watching YouTube, there's a different attention span and there's a different thing that you seek out than when you're watching television. Copying something to a different medium doesn't always work, and it, I think, misses opportunities. So what is so exciting for us in the show is taking the breadth of multi-platform media available, Twitter, Facebook, blogs, WordPresses. Will Shakespeare has a blog, because in reality, if he was alive today, he'd probably blog. Yeah. He'd write some really awful poetry and post it online for everyone to see, and Ben Johnson would read it. People tweet. Thomas Kidd tweets his jam. Just we're trying to create a reality that is also interactive. Mm-hmm. We mentioned fan media. I'm so excited by allowing an audience to interact and relate and have a direct connection with what we make, with the show, with the characters, not just providing a passive piece of media for them to consume, but utilizing the connectivity of social media, of the way we connect with each other now, and translating that to our story, to the fictions we create, and letting them be a real part of your world, of the world of anyone watching.
How much were you inspired by Mad Men tweets?
You know what? I'm so out of the loop. I didn't know Mad Men tweeted. We took a big jumping point off of Lizzie Bennet Diaries.
That
They're
makes
a big
sense, yeah.
inspiration to us.
Yeah.
Heck, things Geek and Sundry are doing, things... when I look at a dozen web series, I see a dozen different formats. Mm-hmm. We're all figuring this out, and it's so exciting to be at the forefront of that.
One thing that I'm kind of interested in is the return of some aspects of the arts for example, the internet has really revived radio because we're still broadcasting on a traditional stream, but you are probably listening to us more likely online or in a podcast. And even just maybe not radio, but podcasting itself is really based on a lot of the values and strategies of radio.
Yes.
Revamped now. Being able to tweet at someone, maybe even just as it's happening online and being able to live tweet, for example, you know, what is that but an electric tomato thrown at an actor who's not doing a good job? Because that's very Shakespearean. He did have this rapport.
Yeah.
And many of the writers of the time really built their audience reaction, yes, into how they were writing, which is something that you wouldn't see at a movie.
I think as members of the theater community, that's something really inspiring for us. Our audience is right there. They're mm-hmm. live, and usually it's a lot of our friends. There's something small about that. And with the advent of the internet, we don't have to pander to large-scale, mainstream, dumbed down. It doesn't have to suit everyone. We're making this show really for, like, each of our 10 best friends mm-hmm. who get the geek references. I hope that is going to be a few thousand people at universities across North America, little cities, people who are closet Shakespeare geeks. That's who we're making this for. And what's so exciting is because the barriers are down, the gateways are down, we can make a show for just the people who are Shakespeare geeks, just the people who get Chaucer references. And it can be distributed. And we can make it of a quality that is worth their time, that is worth their time. That's a big change.
What about you, Xander? Is having, as you said, kind of trained in the theater, is what skills translated well to this kind of web series format, and what were some of the things that you actually had to learn in order to actually function within this kind of setup?
Well, I mean, before I went back to school, I pretty much lived on YouTube. So, I mean, from you know, Lonely Girl 15 and Chocolate Rain, and I've been pretty, like,
the classics.
Yeah, the classics, you know, All Your Bass are Belong to Us and all that. I've been an internet nerd since, God, the zygote.
If I'm not mistaken, you're kind of a big name fan in some circles. We're internet kids. We grew up on it.
Yeah, really much. I think in the internet generation, it seems so natural to take the leap to transmedia. Like when they were like, oh yeah, well, Shakespeare has a blog. Do you want to come film? We filmed a version of a song that he writes that Shakespeare, that he either wrote or like stole for this, for a play called Winter Winds. Blow, blow, that winter wind is like a song in a play he wrote. And they're just like, oh yeah, do you want to record like a version of that, you and your guitar, and we'll just put it up on your blog as like a blog post. And I was like, yeah, that seems totally normal. If we're creating this like alternate universe in which these characters live, of course they would. Like, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I mean, there's so much going on. There's, you know, there's Twitters and... Twitters? You know,
yeah.
I've had a Twitter for like 4 years. I still don't know what the plural is.
I believe you tweet on Twitter, and there are Twitter accounts.
So
I don't know if Twitter's.
Accounts?
I don't know.
You
I mean,
say
I think.
Twitai?
I think you 100% should say Twitai.
Okay,
and
now
I think
on.
We all should. Because screw Latin, whatever.
Yeah. It's a dead language. But I mean, it is a little overwhelming being like, well, how do I get in? Like, especially if you're going to come into the show later, like, how can I get into this with all of these different things happening? Mm-hmm. And I think I'm only writing for the YouTube show. Mm-hmm. And I think one of our goals in writing is to make the show also work traditionally,
mm-hmm.
As basically a 2-hour piece of entertainment that you mm-hmm. can absorb. And it will be colored and fleshed out by all of this Twitter stuff happening in the mm-hmm. background. But I mean, for me, we really want to produce something also that stands on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you guys now, is each actor, each character tweeting themselves, or is that a different
That's
team?
That's a secret.
Yeah. Oh, I knew it
it's
probably
actual,
would be, but I want to try to catch it off guard.
Actual characters. They live.
William Shakespeare. I don't know. There's that Star Trek where that guy goes into the computer. It's all good. It could happen. You don't know. Well, we're gonna wrap things up for the night, gentlemen. Is there anything else you want to add? Let's give me the rundown of the URLs that people need
yes.
to know about.
Blankverse.tv, that's the big one. Blankverse.tv, where you can see the shows, the updates. Google Blankverse on YouTube.
I have a question about Blankverse.tv.
Yeah?
Since the veil is up everywhere else on the Twitter, mm-hmm. And like these characters are living real lives, is Blankverse TV the place where people can go where we say this is fake?
Yes, yeah. Blankverse.tv is the real home of the production.
Through the fourth wall.
The fourth wall. If you find Georgia Roberta Greenpeel on Twitter, she's a character. If you find Thomas Kidd, she's a character. And Blankverse.tv will link you to all those places if you want it, to willshakespearewrites.wordpress or something. I don't know the URL. Will Shakespeare Writes is a blog. That's all on Blankverse.tv. And every Sunday, right around 10:30 in the morning, we're going to be releasing a new scene on YouTube. So if you look us up, our YouTube account, Blankverse.tv, that's where you can tune in.
And if you guys have time to make a radio-friendly version, I would be more than happy to air episodes on After the Arts Report, where time permitting.
You are wonderful.
I know. This has been the Arts Report on CITR 101.9. And we are going to wrap things up for the day. I want to thank all my guests, Xander and Ryan, as well as Enrique. Please check out the Vancouver Latin American Film Festival and check out blankverse.tv. We didn't give away any tickets today, which is just fine, because check out Twitter at CITR_artsreport, and we'll see what we can do for y'all for the Vancouver Latin American Film Festival. This Sunday, Victory Square Block Party, I'm going to be emceeing around 2. Lots of CITR people are going to be there, so please come support Megaphone. It's a free whole day of amazing music, so check it out.
Music Waste, and CITR present the 9th Annual
Victory Square Block Party.
An afternoon of fundraising, comedy, nature, and of course music, all in a historic setting with you and your friends.
Well, I can't stand it.
What's that? You and your friends isn't grammatically correct. Well, that's not really important right now, because we're talking about the Victory Square Block Party, which features Slam Dunk, The Courtneys, Slow Learners, Christy Lane Sinclair, Young Brazed, Cascadia, and the V. Vecker Ensemble. It all happens for free on September 1st from 2 to 9 p.m. Be there or be Victory Square.
I'm feeling like Lando Calrissian, city in the clouds, all white and obsidian. Shoe color very like city in Earth's veins. Your shirt so stained, skirt so drained when she see me on stage.